to start this session. Let me thank everyone who's here in the room for being here in the room. Those people just coming into the room, please take a seat with a microphone, because we can't hear you if you don't speak into the microphone. My name is Leo Vigoda, and I work for ICANN. I'm the number resources manager within IANA, and basically that means I look after the IP addressing side of things for ICANN. And this session is to talk about IPv6 deployment issues, and in particular, I'd like to focus this session on some of the issues associated with IPv6 deployment in name registration, IPv6 support from domain name registries, and IPv6 support from domain name registrars. This session... I've got to click the button again. Why is that? Ah, that explains it. Okay, so this session is meant to be completely interactive, in the sense that it only succeeds if the people in the room participate. In order to help that participation, we have translation for anyone who wants it into all those languages there: French, Spanish, Chinese, Korean, and English. You just twiddle the dial until you can understand, and there you go. That's basically that's so that we can have a really interactive discussion. I want to start off by just making sure that everyone is on the same level and describe what DNS Glue is, because I know that this is one of the biggest issues in IPv6 deployment for the DNS. Unfortunately, there are problems in getting IPv6 glue into the DNS. So this is a simplified example of a DNS transaction where you don't have glue. Someone asks the question, where is example.org? And they get the answer back, ask ns.example.org. But of course, unless you know where ns.example.org is, you can't go to find out about example.org. And because the record ns.example.org sits inside example.org, you need a bit of help. And a bit of help could look like this with IPv6 glue, where at the end, the answer comes back, ask ns.example.org, and here's its IP address. And this is one of the problems that we have in IPv6 deployment in the DNS, is it's often very difficult to register IPv6 glue. Registrars sometimes don't make it easy or don't support it. So that is the slideshow. I'd like to ask the people who are here in the room to start the discussion. Perhaps saying, you know, like if you're a registrar or a registry and you've supported IPv6 already, let us know what you've done. If you're a registrant and you're having a problem, or a registrar or registry and you have a problem, please raise those issues and questions. Is that a hand up I see over there? Oh, you're just stretching. Okay. This could be a short session if we don't have questions. Go ahead.
Hi, this is Louis Lee, the chair of the ASO Address Council. I wanted to find out from those registries and registrars who have already implemented V6 on their servers, either just being able to answer queries over V6 transport, or actually being able to answer and reply with Quad A records, blue data like this. How long it took you guys to do the planning and the implementation to get it done? And maybe if you are able to share in a public forum at some point how those plans came about, if maybe you can share the technical expertise there. And if I could ask you to state your name, come up to the mic if you are answering this. Thank you.
Anyone want to answer? I can see that Roy and Hiro both have answers for this, which is great. Hiro, are you going to start?
All right, thanks, Leo. Could you put up the slide? Yes, it's a very colorful slide I sent Leo about the IPv6 enabled research system. This is the overall structure illustrating that what portions of JP registry, JP domain name registry, accommodate IPv6. There are very many portions to make them available for IPv6. And there are two aspects of IPv6 enabling for registry services. The first is, as Leo said, that to make web browsers or mail servers of the registrants, the domain name holders, accessible using IPv6 protocol. This is done by associating IPv6 addresses to registrants' domain names. This correspondence is set into the DNS zone file, such as Blue Records of Quad A. The portions to be changed for this purpose are shown in the picture by big red circles. The registry system must take IPv6 address as input from registrants and reflect it to the zone file and WHIS data. According to our measurement a half year ago, in February this year, I think, about 10% of the DNS queries to .jp DNS were for Quad A. And the second is make the services provided by the registry and its partners accessible using IPv6 protocol by registrars, restaurants, and internet users. This diagram shows that a lot of registry functions are accessed by other entities. In the near future, it is very likely that some of the registrars or users will have only IPv6 access facilities. For them to access the registry services, the small red circles are the points to be IPv6 enabled. From the bottom right, registration application interfaces for both transactions and emails. We have emails in .jp's case for application, from domain name registration application. And who is dedicated? Who is dedicated to registrars? We have two versions of who is. One is for registrars, and one is for public. And web for registrars administration, and mail server for Q&A, the usual Q&A. These should be made all IPv6 enabled. For ordinary users to access the registry services, from the top left, public whois, web for the public, mail server for Q&A, and of course DNS services. DNS servers. These should be made IPv6 enabled. In addition to these, as shown as small dark blue circles on the right-hand side, for example, since registration qualification check, such as whether go.jp applicants are really a government organizations or not, is done by some government authority. These inquiries and answers are communicated between a registry server and a government server. As this communication is a dedicated one, it's now on IPv4. However, it had better be on IPv6 to be prepared for the future. between the registry and the escrow agent, the same situation. Additionally, to cope with a large number of packets, there are a lot of load balancers and packet filters are installed everywhere, such as for application transactions and who is. So replacing these load balancers, which have been only IPv4 enabled, to those devices which are IPv6 enabled, seem to cost a lot for us. So, and the percentage of the applications are 0.7%. So this is the overall picture of for the registry services to be IPv6 enabled. All right, thanks, pretty much it.
Thank you very much. Roy, you also had something to say on in IPv6 enabling a registry. Go ahead.
Thanks, Leo. My name is Roy Ahrens. I work for Nominet. Nominet is the UK registry. For us, there were three aspects to deployment of IPv6. Two of them are actually related to each other. The first aspect was to enable registrars to register IPv6 addresses as glue in the UK zone, actually the coded UK zone. We have a fair amount of IPv6 addresses there. We have been doing this, I think, since 2003, 2004. I remember because that's about the time that we started development on it, finished development on it. That's one aspect, so we enable registrars to register IPv6 glue in the coded UK zone. The other aspect is that our name servers, of course, have to be reachable over IPv6. So that second aspect, hosting your name servers on an IPv6 address, is important. So we have enabled three of our 11 name servers to be we have enabled three of the 11 name servers for IPv6. NS1, NS4, and NSA, if I recall correctly. One of these three is actually of our Anycast provider, Ultra DNS. In their Anycast cloud have enabled IPv6 as well. And the third aspect, which is of course important as well, is that these addresses need to be in the root as well. So the root, of course, is reachable over IPv6. UK is reachable over, the UK name servers are reachable over IPv6. So I think we've enabled the entire path needed for resolvers and clients to reach UK namespace over IPv6. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Roy. I think the question that I have for you or Hiro or any of the other registry operators in the room is this. You've enabled the technical path, but the other side comes from the registrant, and it goes through the registrar or the reseller. And what progress is there on enabling that path to putting IPv6 in the DNS? Anyone? Anyone got an answer on what's going on with helping registrants take their IPv6 connectivity, get their addresses, and pop them in the DNS? So we've got a real problem, because Hiro and Roy have done great work in making sure that the technical side of things is sorted, and the social side of things, none of us in the room seems to know what how we can get our IPv6 addressable name servers into the DNS. Has anyone here actually tried to put their IPv6 addressable name servers into the DNS? Perhaps there's someone here from an organization who has their domain IPv6 enabled already that could give a case study. Surely someone other than me has a domain that is accessible over IPv6. Maybe one of the RIRs, because I think it's possible that they might have done it.
Well, APNIC, I'm Paul Wilson from APNIC, and we have certainly done it, but it's a very long time since I have personally put my hands onto a DNS server, and it certainly predates IPv6, so I'm sorry, I'm not... if you're after an actual nuts and bolts answer, I'm not the guy to give it.
It was less the how did you technically do it, and more, did you need to call in a favor? Or did you go to the registrar who registered your domain and say, here you go, and there was no problem?
If there were any problems, I didn't hear about it. So.
That's possibly encouraging.
Well, it works.
Okay.
It does work.
So anyone from a registry that could say what sort of proportion of the name servers that have glue have IPv6 glue in their registry databases?
This is Roy Aarons. Very few. I can't give you actual numbers, but it is still very few. I can give you an answer on the query load.
That would be interesting.
Okay, we have on a daily rate, on average, 5 to 10% Quad A requests. A Quad A request is basically a resolver asking for an IPv6 address to one of our name servers. So we can see the query load coming in. 5 to 10% of all the queries for addresses are IPv6.
Hero?
Yes, as I said, as .uk, 10% of the DNS queries are for Quad A. I don't have the static data, how many percents are Quad A among all the A and Quad A. And the second one is 0.7% of the queries comes from the IPv6 enabled resolvers. So it's a small number, but it's growing. So the IPv6 enabled resolvers are, the numbers are growing.
So what I get from both your answer and Roy's answer is that there is real demand for IPv6 in the sense that 10% roughly of the queries are for Quad A's, and ISPs resolvers, I guess once they're set up, they don't need to change. So having a small percentage of IPv6 enabled resolvers isn't so exceptional, but there's a significant number of clients out there that would be using IPv6, maybe are using IPv6. We don't know what actually happens on the end connection, but so there's genuine demand, and we do occasionally get comments. Let's not say complaints. Comments that it's very difficult for people to go and register IPv6 glue. And we can see that there is the demand for people will be using IPv6 because they're sending these Quad A queries. And we've got people who would like to provide their services over IPv6, and they're having problems registering it. And I think this in just the first 20 minutes has been clear that we don't have the technical problem, we've got a business problem. I've got...
Okay. I decided to speak, although I don't have much data. My name is Pedro Veiga. I am from the .pt for Portugal registry. We began in 2003, 2004, updating our information system to allow GLU records with IPv6 addresses. We updated that. Then we changed our EPP8 interface to allow registrars to use that. And as we ran also the research and education network of the country, we updated all our network to be full dual stack. And then we had some financing for all universities in the country to update their resolvers, their mail servers, and their web servers to be dual stack. But we don't have many, as we are the registry, we don't have many users putting their IPv6 addresses. Concerning our infrastructure, one of our name servers is IPv6 compliant. I'm looking to the IANA database. It's our NS2 DNSPT. And one of our secondary name servers, the one run by ISC, is also IPv6 enabled. Concerning the deployment of IPv6 in the country, that could motivate a lot of requests to the name servers using IPv6. The situation is not very positive because the ISPs are not willing to invest resources in being IPv6 enabled. And we have a very small but representative situation. It was last year we opened a tender to connect 500 sites, and in the request of that public tender, we were requiring to the ISP providing that 20 connectivity to have IPv4 and IPv6. That proved to be a problem for some sites because in some situations the ISP was had in some exchanges their own equipment, but in other cases they had to buy to the incumbent IP access, and the network of the incumbent does not provide IPv6 connectivity. So there were a lot of problems. I am shifting a little from the pure DNS thing, but this is to give a broad view of the problems that we are having in deploying IPv6. We also identified when, 3-4 years ago, I cannot remember the date, when Windows Vista became available on the market, a big increase in the number of requests to the name servers for IPv6 GLU records. But I don't have much specific data about the percentage because my technical staff is not here. But if you want, I am ready to clarify some of these points.
I think that's really interesting. In particular, the issues you said your suppliers had in providing IPv6 because of the incumbent provider. Is that something that people see happening in other countries as well, where there's IPv6 enabled at one end of something and IPv6 enabled at the other end, and there's a chunk in the middle where there's no IPv6 available? Is that something that people see? Anyone? Yes, go ahead.
My name is Imran Ahmed Shah. I'm from Pakistan and representing through a fellowship program and representing Urdu Internet Community, Urdu Internet Council. Regarding the IPv6, I want to mention that there are not the problem on the server level, DNS servers or the hosting server, but there are a big problem in the applications which are being used at the end user level. For example, if there is a network of old systems, old computers with the old version of the Windows environment, they don't have the capability of entering the IPv6 version of the version, and they only have IPv4. So actually we should have to facilitate the user first, who are going to communicate, who are going to be connected to some hosting servers for browsing their websites or to communicate across the borders of the countries to another developed country through the email address which is enabled in the IPv6. So the problem may be resolved by the time when you will facilitate the plugins and add-in application software to enable the previous versions of the Windows and other tools to enable IPv6. But at this time, if there is a no cutoff date that you announce that after this date, no registrar or the hosting server or the data center people or the DNS server people will be using IPv4. If you have a cut date at this moment, then there is a problem. But with the passage of time, if you facilitate both facilities, IPv4 and IPv6, in the DNS server level and in the hosting server level, then everyone will be facilitated and will be going on to the IPv6 time by time, step by step. Yes.
Go ahead.
My name is Yao V from Benin, but I'm working in Ghana and I'm from Togo. So I want to talk about the experience in Benin. According to what my colleagues say, I'm also a fellowship. I don't think that we user we have a problem, because it's not a problem of the user. Even if we talk about IPv6, I'm part of the ISOC chapter in Benin. We organize with the help of AFRINI, the local African registry area, some workshop, technical workshop, because we think that the question today is to inform people, to educate people that one day we'll be moving to IPv6. But I don't think that we have a problem as a user today. And in the world, the user don't have problem. Even today, if I take my computer today, if I have the latest version from some version of Windows, I have IPv6 enabled already. So the point is that what am I going to do? Even me, we have some webs, we have some sites, you have some places you can just get an IPv6 address. But as a user, you don't have a problem. This is the point. So I don't think that there is a question of user. It's a question of most of the ISPs, most of the educated people. If they want to get an equipment today, it is better if they have to invest in new equipment. And this is what we are doing. And also from the civil society, like the ISO chapter, we organize a workshop where we have the government people, the telecom people, and we want them to have their equipment IPv6 enabled, so that in the future, because I believe that we are going to use IPv4 maybe for 10, 15, 20 years again. So in the future, where people are moving, we are not going to be back. So it is most a question of the technical, the telecom people, the ISP, to have the equipment. And also the application, because if I have IPv6, what am I going to do? I don't mind. I want to communicate. I want to send email. But I don't mind if it's IPv6. The protocol is not my problem as a user. So I think the user, they don't have too much problem today about IPv6. The problem is most of the political people, the technical people. This is my point coming from Benin.
My friend, actually, as an end user, then you will not be able to connect with the network or with the internet using the IPv4 when IPv6 is enabled, and the applications running on the higher level will only be able to work on the IPv6 version, then how you will send your email, how you will be able to connect to browse a website, even it is Amazon.com.
I think it is clear. Question of application, you don't have a problem. If you want to send email, you want to call it. IPv6 and IPv4, they will be together for a long time, and technical people, they are working on that. So my point is that we as a user, we don't have a problem. If you want to do something, the only point is that if there are new applications people are developing, I think they are taking care that at least so people using IPv4, they can also run it. So what I'm saying is that as a user, we have to be aware and then inform our political people, our technical people, that they need to upgrade the equipment. If they have to invest, they don't have to buy all the equipment. But as a user, we don't have a problem. You can continue sending email. They will not have date where people are saying you will stop IPv4. So IPv4 will continue, IPv6 will continue. It is just a question of having more IP addresses and maybe some application you need more addresses. But I don't think that we need to be informed to know so that we can talk to our people, our technical people, to prepare themselves. But we don't have a problem. Like you can get IPv6 on a machine, but what are you going to do with?
I see Miwa and then Louis and Phyllis want to speak. Maybe in that order because it's coming back to me, and then we'll go around again. Thank you.
Thank you. My name is Miwa from APNIC. I think it was a very interesting discussion happening in here. I also think which IP, which protocol you would use from end user's point is totally transparent. So you would not need to worry about you may lose the connectivity because your PC is only available with V4 because most of the networks will run with dual stack for many, many, many years. So it won't be an issue. But simultaneously, ISP, the gentleman over there from Ghana mentioned about the ISP really need to prepare with IPv6, and I completely agree with that. That part of the infrastructure really need to move to the IPv6. But at the end of this table, the gentleman mentioned there is not enough business case for ISPs to invest for IPv6, so it's not moving towards IPv6. And from where the business case, we need to think about from where the business case will emerge. That would be from the enterprises and content providers who are the customers of enterprise customers of ISPs. Probably we need to approach to those people. And I mean here, this is my first IGAM meeting participation because I'd like to outreach to the registrar people to collaborate in the future to disseminate necessary information. Their customers, who are the enterprises and content providers, increase the awareness how it's important for prepare their website with IPv6. So any banking, online banking site or online shopping website will not lose connectivity from the IPv6 only end users. So probably if there is any possibility to collaborate in that sense, if we can discuss about that, that would be great. If anyone have any opinion or comment, I'd like to hear that. Thank you.
Louis?
Thank you, Leo. This is Louis Lee. Along the lines here with that, I wanted to mention that for the users, it not being able to reach some sites, it's almost like when you reach a site and you can't see some of Flash content because you haven't upgraded your Adobe Flash module. It for some of them, they'll just know, okay, well, some places to go, I will just need to upgrade in order to do that. And they'll just demand that from their provider that they want to reach a site, and the provider will have to deal with trying to figure out what the problem is. Now, for the providers, it's a matter of business continuity to be able to continue to provide the whole internet to their customers, not just the V4 only internet anymore. they will lose access to the V6 internet if they're not ready for providing that transport. So then it's no longer a business case of waiting for demand from the customer. It is now business continuity. Do you want to be the one to explain to your boss why you can't grow a user base anymore? You now are stuck. And how long will it take for you to test V6 on your network? Now, for the content providers, it's the same case. They will no longer be able to reach the users that are on the V6 only space. And when they put up their websites to have a V6 address, who are they going to go to put in that quad record? Who are they going to go to put their name server in with a quad A record, glue records, glue data? So they're going to be looking to you. Do you want to be able to serve these customers as they are preparing? That's up to you. What is your business continuity? What is your business plan? It might have to do with the political side, whether you get support from your government. It might have to do with asking for your CFO, your financial officer, to give you the resources to do it. But you show them that you don't want to stop being able to grow. You might actually shrink your business if a smaller and smaller percentage of the net is being able to reach you. Thank you.
Phyllis?
Hello, Phyllis Yamazra, IPNCC. I work for a regional internet registry. And, I'm not going to specifically talk about DNS and TLD level, but I want to share a few points with you like Miwa did. I can't agree with more with you guys what you have just said. I think, and I agree with you as well, both of you, I think it's a matter of awareness and communication at this point, because technically this thing works. We just need to come together and make sure that it will be the next step for us as the internet grows. But we are conducting, as the regional internet registry, we have some training courses. We just started for IP version 6. And we want to, based on that, this is an awareness and communication situation now, we do these trainings on a very interactive basis. So it's not a very technical training, but we put people together, which is basically mostly the engineers, and ask them how they would convince their bosses to invest in this now or start thinking about this so that in 3 years' time, 4 years' time, they will sustain their business. And we have been receiving, you know, very interesting messages out of this. And some engineers are very successfully putting the matter at the table and going back home and starting these, you know, strategies, trying to convince their bosses or management or financial level. You know what I'm talking about here. And the main incentive for them, they think, what we hear from them, is basically to focus on, yes, do you want to be in business in 3 years' time? Because by that time, obviously we have an IP version 4 depletion. Any business with an internet, take this be domain name or service provider or content provider, you got to be moving on and making sure that your business will be running on IP version 6. My second point is, again, as an experience from this awareness campaign we've been providing so far and we've been engaging to, is that we've been talking to a lot of IP version 6 experts over some time, and one message they put on is basically, do it step by step. You don't have to do it all in one go, which is going to be expensive, yes, and then it will be hard to convince and get funded for that, even from the engineering level or hard from the above. And one important thing they focus on is to continue your business. You always buy equipment, right? You renew your equipment. What you need to do now, basically, is just make sure that it will do IP version 6 for you. And this is a requirement that you can ask from the vendors when you buy your equipment. And this is the minimal thing you can do, they say. And then move on, make your website IP version 6 enabled. And then go on the other levels, integrate your end users. Now, my second point is, I've been saying this to a few people around, about the end user seamless issue, that it doesn't have to be identified as IP version 6 or IP version 4 to the end user. Yes, as an end user, I'm part of a pilot project now back in my hometown, and I have IP version 6 enabled in my home network. And it doesn't ask me. My provider provided me with some solution, and it was very easy. It was, you know, it took me about 20 minutes to configure everything. And then now I'm running IP version 6 along with IP version 4 and make sure that whichever site I'm going through, if it is enabled, the preference is IP version 6. If not, it falls into IP version 4. And fair enough, I'm an end user over there with the hat. But I think this crowd is a special end user. We are all internet aware. We are all in part of this community. And although I agree that it is mostly the providers, the governments, service providers, content providers' responsibility to make sure that this is, you know, this is gonna shoot basically to some extent. I think we also have some responsibilities. As an internet aware end user, I can always go to my service provider and ask, so are you going to make sure that I am still connected in 3 years? I hear that. So we can all do something, I believe, in this. So that's my final remark. Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you, Phyllis. It's nice to have an action point to take away, which is for everyone to go and ask their ISP what's going on. Just as an end user, that's probably a great thing. But we've got another comment. In fact, I should probably...
Thank you very much for your comments. But you were enabled by your ISP because you were using at least latest computers with the latest version of the operating system running in your organization or in your office network. But can you imagine in my homeland, we are using Pentium 3 computers and Pentium 4 computers. And we are running the older version of the Windows and maybe Windows 95. So once we can't afford at the end user level for the cost of the computers or for the cost of the new version of the Windows, how we can provide them facility to use or to come on a network of IPv6. This is the basic problem for IT support people, being IT technical support people, how I can facilitate my users. Even they have no concern, they will demand, give me the computer and connect it to the internet. I have to send my email and I have to browse CNN.com. But his demand is fine. We have to honor their demand. But we have some technical issues that how we can upgrade their operating systems and their computers to enable for the IPv6. So my point is this, there should not be a cutoff date for IPv4 version. It should go parallel, and even if the IPv4 users, they are coming to connect their computers or their networks to the internet, they should be facilitated step by step when everyone will have the new version of the computers and new version of the applications. Then you can stop using the IPv4. And similarly, at the server levels, at the hosting server levels, we don't have a bigger fund, a bigger amount for the upgradation of the servers and for the applications, even on the ISPs. Most of our hosting service providers are just facilitating the capability to host the information of our peoples on the local servers, and they are not getting a big profit from out of their business, so they can't go to upgrade their hardware. This is the main issue. Thank you.
Paul Wilson from APNIC. To respond to that, I think you've got a serious concern and problem there, and it's probably important to understand that there's no transition date to go to IPv6, and there's certainly no transition date to take IPv4 away that would apply to the internet globally. The internet's distributed, and almost everything is in the hands of individual organizations, service providers, infrastructure providers, or in some cases coordination entities like CCTLD registries and registrars and so on. It would be a very a bold decision of any of them at some point, even 10 years from now, I suggest, to stop supporting IPv4. But if anyone did take that move, then I think they would, if they took that move prematurely, then they would be subject to a barrage of complaint about from IPv4 only users. That is, if in 10 years' time there is, or down the track when that happens, if there is in fact a substantial community of IPv4 only users still remaining. If there is, and in any case, I'd just take us back to the earlier days of the internet, where a lot of us were using an operating system called Windows version 3.1, if anyone remembers that, and it had no TCP connectivity at all. And it was actually a small Australian company that produced a package called Trumpet Winsock, which was installed in the millions and millions around the world to upgrade, to provide IPv4 capability to Windows 3.1, and that was... I mean, the guy who produced that software really is some kind of an unsung hero, I think, because he actually did allow connectivity of millions of people. But any computer that can run IPv4 can also run IPv6 in terms of its capacity, its computing capacity, because there's very little difference between them. And I would suggest that if there was any case in which we found ourselves with a substantial body of users who were still stuck with older operating systems that didn't support IPv6, and IPv6 becomes a priority, then it would be a very good subject for developmental funding for innovators in those countries to actually develop the capacity and to implement and distribute that. And I say that in particular because APNIC is a partner in a small grants funding program called ICIF, the Information Society Innovation Fund, and that would be exactly the kind of technical innovation project with a serious developmental impact, a potential developing country impact, that would be a target for funding there. But there'd be other ways, I think, in which innovators could actually get some assistance and provide in that kind of internet community spirit, in the way that things have been done ever since, as I say, the late 1980s to facilitate the internet around the world.
Thanks, Paul. I can see there are two other people that want to speak. Yovi, you wanted to speak, and then I'll go to the end of the table.
What I wanted to say is that I'm technical, but today I'm a bad commercial because people don't have to be afraid about 98 and the old version. I'm still using Windows 2000 on a machine at home. The point is to know what you want to do with your machine. And the question is that if you want to buy, don't buy all the equipment. But as he said, if you are your community, they're still using all the equipment, you can still find a way over the internet. There are a lot of resources that can help you solve the small problem. But the point is that if you want to buy new equipment, there's no way to buy very old equipment. to buy the equipment that can help you to have IPv6. So the community, they don't have to worry about changing equipment. People have the solution. That is what is great on the internet. You just go to the internet, you find the solution. So you don't have to worry about equipment.
Thanks.
excuse me. Part of the discussion, as we said, is about the software capability of the desktop or of laptop concerning IPv6. But in my opinion, there is a more serious problem is the routers that are in homes and small offices. Many of them have been installed in the last 5-10 years. They are not IPv6 compliant. And that will require a big investment from the ISPs to replace them. So the problem is not the new version of the operating system. If I am running Linux, I can install easily a version that is dual stack. But then if the router through which I access the network is not compliant, there is nothing to be done. And that will be another bottleneck.
I can see Paul Wilson wants to respond to that. Or were you just stretching?
No, I'd love to respond to that. What you've described is one of the transition challenges, but it's one that's being addressed. So we hear sometimes people suddenly say, oh, IPv4 and IPv6 aren't compatible, as though it's just been discovered. But in fact, the engineers who developed IPv6 in the first place made a hard decision, but a deliberate decision, that it would not be compatible, that we weren't going to burden the internet for decades to come by this curse of backward compatibility, which in fact dogs the operating system that's on your desk that compromises its efficiency forevermore. That what we would do would be go for a transition to a new technology without the backward compatibility, but relying on transition tools and transition methods that would allow it to happen seamlessly. So there is no doubt at all that there'll be millions of users around the world who have IPv4-only equipment on their desktops at a time when there are also IPv6-only users and websites around. And that is exactly the challenge, but this is the sort of thing that protocols are designed exactly to do. So protocols and mechanisms like DS Lite, Dual Stack Lite, Gateway Mechanism, Network Address Translation Mechanisms are being designed for exactly that. So you have described a problem, but it's not an unanticipated problem or an insoluble problem. It's just one of the things that we're grappling with and have grappled pretty well with at the technical level. These protocols actually have been designed, but it's now up to ISPs to deploy them on machines that can cope with the load for the appropriate number of users within the ISP infrastructure, for ISP engineers to actually understand how to deploy them and keep the network seamlessly operating and reliably and securely operating. And when you put it all together, it is a challenge, and you've identified one of them, but it's one that's being addressed just as part of that process.
Thanks, Paul. I think one of the things I think you have to be right that there is a way to provide IPv6 access despite machines that CPEs, the home gateways that don't have IPv6 support, because Hero and Roy are seeing lots of Quad A queries on their name servers. So we have some empirical evidence that there are machines out there that think they have IPv6 connectivity and they want to use it. So the likes of me, who aren't as lucky as Phyllis to have native IPv6 at home but use a tunnel, we're probably the kinds of people that are sending all those queries to the .uk or .jp name servers and saying, please tell me about these hosts. And so these transition mechanisms definitely seem to be working, even though we know they're not perfect. But we presumably need more than just transition mechanisms like tunnels like we're using now, because in some time in the future, 18 months, 3 years, exactly when we can't say because we can't predict human behavior, all network expansion will either need some horrific NAT hack or IPv6. to expand networks. Where there's new build offices and new build homes, the connections will presumably have to come over IPv6. And so the bits of internet infrastructure need to be ready so that those new consumers who are going to come along are going to have access to the internet. And we need to look at all of this critical path. So, you know, we've got at the top where the DNS is with .jp and .uk, you know, they're sorted, they're ready, and .pt is ready, and we've got some users that are ready, and we've got lots of stuff in the middle that needs to get ready. Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, okay, Akin Maimura, JPNIC. I'd like to share my experience as the end user. As well as Phyllis, I got the IPv6 connection at home, which is the tunneling. And my deployment of the IPv6 in the home is really smooth. That is fantastic. XP can speak IPv6, and my MacBook can easily speak IP address. Only my expense was the a bit expensive router, which can speak IPv6. And I have a small server in my home to have my private domain name. And it is running the FreeBSD, and there's no problem to deploy the IPv6. And then the next problem would be, my name server and mail server is now speaking IPv6. Then the next thing for me is to register the Quadrate GRU for my private domain name. But I couldn't do that because the registrar don't support that. And I was so frustrated, and I actually make an inquiry to my registrar. When do you support IPv6? And their answer is very clear: no, there's no plan for the IPv6. And my job is something like a promotion of the internet, so I was so concerned about that. But I found that that is not so big problem because we have not so big number, but we have several registrars who can support the IPv6. Then what I have to do is just change the registrar. Then I can have the Quadrate record glued to my private domain name. So that's a sharing of my experience.
Fantastic. So market forces solving problems.
Yes, that's right.
Has anyone else had similar experiences where they've tried to put IPv6 glue to the name service for their domain name? Because Paul didn't have a problem, and other people have had problems. I've tried and failed. we don't seem to have many registrars in the room, which is a shame, because maybe that's actually why we don't have many registrars in the room, because they're letting the side down. It does look to me increasingly, this is what we started the session with, and perhaps maybe it's where it'll end up, but we seem to have a problem with IPv6 registration in the DNS, because we can, from an IPv4 only host, we can tunnel IPv6 to somewhere else, and the infrastructure, the exchange points, the TLDs, they seem to be all geared up. It's the bits in the middle that connect it, the bits of market, and maybe some market effect like losing customers would encourage registrars to provide IPv6 glue registration. I don't know how many domain name holders would have to move away from a registrar before they started supporting IPv6 Glue. And I think it's definitely worth everyone in this room to go and, if they've got a domain name registered, speak to their registrar and find out whether it's supported.
And then, I can remember again, and it is very important to for registrar to support the restoration of the quad-way glue, because every content provider and service provider need to register the quad-way glue. Then they are doing they are preparing something for the throughout the time of the depletion of the IPv4 address space. Then it's just the time frame of the 1 year or 2 years. So the registrar need to support the IPv6 glue restoration before that. So yes, as I said, if the one registrar can support the IPv6 glue, that's okay. But maybe it will bring us a big problem or confusion. Sometimes some content provider and service provider has a problem to register the glue, IPv6 glue. So I feel like asking ICANN for doing some promotions for that.
That's partly what this session is about, because we have had a number of comments. Maybe I should say a little bit about what ICANN has done in this area, just so that you know that we aren't ignoring it. About 2 years ago now, I suppose it must be, we started doing a series of sessions where we're talking to registries and registrars about IPv6 support. We're aiming in those sessions at the GTLD registries and the ICANN accredited registrars. And the first one I went to talk about this was at the New Orleans registries and registrars meeting. And I think that must be about 2 years now, because it was sometime around October, and it was a couple of years ago. And we've done this at each of the registry and registrar meetings we've had since then. We've also had a couple of sessions like this at ICANN meetings. What we don't have is we don't have a compulsion to require registrars to provide this support in the contract they have with us. Obviously, any change to that contract would need to be approved by the registrars. We don't impose contracts, they're agreed. That being said, it would be good to have a lot more registrars support IPv6, because there's clearly a lack there. As you also probably know, there's a program for the introduction of new GTLDs. One of the things we're looking at in that is a requirement for the new GTLD registries to have an element of IPv6 support in there for communication with registrars, registration of IPv6 glue, all that goodness. Of course, again, we can't impose that. We aren't a top-down organization. We're a bottom-up organization. All these things come about as a result of agreements, consultation between the various communities and constituencies and the ICANN board. So these are things that we're doing to try and persuade people. This session is part of that. But just ICANN staff and board voices, they're just very few of us, and we need a greater noise from a greater number. And so if people coming out of this session say, hey, I see a problem and want to raise it, then that would be great. Louis.
Thanks, Leo. I'm wondering if there is somewhere a list of registries and registrars that have variable support for V6, and if there are pointers from the typical V6 information sites to these lists.
I believe that the 6XS site has a per-country listing for registrars that support IPv6 GLU registration. It doesn't take very long to load the page. But, yes, they. I believe they do have a listing.
What was that?
It's on 6xs.net, and that's SIXXS.net, is that right? And that's .net? .net, okay. So if you look on that website, there is a page which lists registrars that support IPv6 GLU registration and the TLDs that they support it in. And if it's outdated because there should be more added to the list, then I'm sure the web page maintainer would be happy to add to the list.
Well, you've pointed people to that website, Leo. I'd be interested if everyone here who's got a laptop would actually visit it and indicate whether or not you're actually seeing the little flag that says you've got IPv6. Because I think we've got a fairly fairly technically au fait audience here, and this may be nothing new to you, but you may actually not realise that you are using IPv6 right now on this network. You haven't had to ask anyone for it. It's been delivered. It may have been delivered with your operating system, and you may well, if it has been delivered with your operating system, you'll be using it. And in fact, it's often not easy to tell, but on this website, 6xs.net, and for that matter on the APNIC website, www.apnic.net, we provide an indication as to whether you've connected through IPv6. So is there anyone who's connected to that and is not seeing the little flag that says, you've got IPv6? Everyone's got IPv6? Not the iPhone. Mm-hmm. Well, there you go. We're getting there. It's happening.
Well, I think we should congratulate the people who run the meeting network then, because they've done a good job. Does anyone else have any comments or questions to make?
If you go to a site called IANA.org, it also says that you have IPv6.
Yes. In fact, I can add on to that. I just before this meeting received the monthly statistics for the percentage of traffic aggregated across all the websites we run, which is the ICANN website, the IANA website, also our FTP site, and aggregated across all of that, boiled down to one number: what percentage of our traffic is IPv6, and it's a whopping 0.7-something%. It's there. You can access them all over IPv6. The vast majority of traffic, really vast majority of traffic, is IPv4. But, yes, something like 0.7% of our traffic is IPv6 last month. This month, with the ICANN meeting, it'll probably be higher.
It's probably better than it sounds, Leo, because it doesn't sound like a lot of traffic, but there are now quite a few researchers who've been tracking this for quite some time now. And while a lot of the internet indicators of activity are quite linear, they're going up in a linear fashion, the IPv6 traffic in terms of volumes and accesses to websites in terms of IP address delegations are exponential. And as we all know, exponential growth is a very good sign. It's something that, assuming it goes on, will produce the numbers that we're looking for, hopefully within the next couple of years. I think it'll be close, but as long as we keep our minds on this, we can get there.
Maybe it's like making a car and just-in-time delivery. Have we drawn to a natural conclusion? think we have. I think I've got to thank everyone for coming to this session. In particular, I've got to thank Hiro, who spoke eloquently about JPRS, Roy, and well, everyone else who came, because it's the people who come to the session that make it a success. I also want to thank our translators because they've been really working very hard for the last hour and a quarter. Thank you to the translators, and thank you to the support staff who've provided the network, provided the streaming, and will put the recorded session on the ICANN meeting website. Thank you all very much, and I guess everyone will be going home in the next day or so, so have a safe and enjoyable journey home.